The Reserve Pool, Episode 34, DC Discussion. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Reserve Pool, a podcast about Dice Masters and all of the people who love to play it. This is Dave here.
And I'm the Evan.
That is the Evan.
The Evan. What the Evan?
So you wouldn't have too far to search if you were trying to have like a rapper nickname. That would be your little intro.
The Evan, yeah.
Alrighty. Well, we have a lot to get to today because we are, as you might have guessed from the show title, going to be talking a lot about the DC stuff that we know now because we know quite a lot. We're also going to be talking about a little bit of the, we'll call it a controversy, I guess, about the Yu-Gi-Oh stuff and just a host of other things to
perhaps
get to.
But kerfluffle?
A kerfluffle?
I don't know if it's quite hit controversy, but...
Great use of kerfluffle.
Yes.
That's fantastic. Yes, so let's get right into the kerfluffle with Yu-Gi-Oh! If you missed it, and it was actually one of the most trafficked articles on our site over the last couple of weeks, but if you missed it, WizKids had unannounced in the Yu-Gi-Oh! Dice Masters rulebook, which is... you know, going to be on shelves very shortly after this episode goes up, probably a few days after, that dice are going to have serial numbers that match the numbers on the card for that specific rarity. So, for example, if, you know, to put it in uncanny X-Men terms, if you had, you know, super rare Scarlet Witch, then the die would have something on it that denotes that it belongs to Super Rare Scarlet Witch.
Yeah,
would have the number.
Yeah. 117 or whatever it is.
Exactly. But which would be different from the number that would be on the Rare Scarlet Witch.
Or
and
the
they're
common.
Going to be exactly. So they're going to be insisting for at least their super sanctioned events that if you're going to use that rare card or that super rare card or even the common card, that you at least one of your dice must match the serial number. And that kind of got some people a little upset, including myself.
I mean, I can kind of understand. Or no, understand is a strong word. I can see the reasoning why they'd want to do that. And your article did pick out, you know, that Konami is not a fan of the secondary market, and that would in fact step on the secondary market a bit.
Well, it's not just that Konami isn't a fan of the secondary market; it's that somebody who was their business partner in publishing Yu-Gi-Oh! In the Americas as well as Europe, pretty much completely screwed them.
Yeah,
I mean.
Yeah,
it's one thing, you know, you'll see those big stories where, you know, Nintendo finds like 48 million counterfeit Pokemon cards. The number here, which was, I think, around 610,000 that Upper Deck produced without Konami, you know, allowing it. They were unauthorized. That's small potatoes. But
it's one thing
Pokemon
when it's
counterfeits. Yeah, it's one
it's
thing,
one thing
people,
when it's just like some like shady company that's printing out fake Charizards. It's another thing when it's like, hey, will you print this for us? Sure. And then they go and print counterfeits.
Exactly. Counterfeit rares. They use them as enticements to buy packs of boosters and different things like that. It was a very shady situation. Konami got burned hard.
Yeah. No, I mean, I can understand that, you know, it's sort of a control and they want to make sure things are, you know, matching and they kind of, you know, I can understand why they're doing it, though. I do think it's not going to help sell the game.
I agree with you. I think it's possible that if we're looking at attracting Yu-Gi-Oh! Fans to this game, and why not? Any collectible, I mean, we're all converts from something else. I, myself, a lot of Magic and Netrunner and so forth. And Evan, of course, you had a healthy background in other CCGs and LCGs.
Yep.
But I don't think it's going to bring anybody over who already plays this game. Perhaps it brings some Yu-Gi-Oh! Folks in who are already used to some of Konami's shenanigans. That I don't know. But, of course, the big thing to know with this is it is not, I repeat, not in any of the rule books that we have for the upcoming stuff, which I guess is just DC at this point, but it's not in there. And WizKids confirmed over Facebook that this will only pertain to the Yu-Gi-Oh! Set. I think it has to be a part of the licensing agreement with Konami, and it has to be because they don't want cards to show up that don't belong, that aren't legit. They don't want cards to show up where somebody has no dice that belong to it. Let's be honest, you're going to be a lot easier to... actually, somebody made this point in the comments. It's a lot easier to come up with a counterfeit card than a counterfeit die. I think this is right. More for card assurances than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why they're doing it. I don't necessarily think it'll do them any favors, but such is how it goes.
WizKids does a lot to keep their people happy. Like, I've said this before, and I know I said it in the recent article too, but they have access to certain licenses only for the purposes of clicks. And in this case, they're trying to pull a lot of those folks in for Dice Masters as well. I'm sure WizKids doesn't want to upset Konami because they seem to enjoy their Yu-Gi-Oh! Hero clicks. I guess that's doing pretty well for them. I don't know. I assume it must be because I see them all over the place. They want to keep their partners happy. And I think this is probably a case of that. It's not the greatest thing for those of us who are playing the game and everything like that. I don't think, as you said, Evan, I don't think it'll do them any favors. But I think I understand why. I think the reasoning makes sense. And I don't think we can really blame WizKids for this one.
Yeah, no, I mean, I wouldn't take it on WizKids. But I say that, but I think it has probably negatively affected the chance that I'm going to pick up any Yu-Gi-Oh! Stuff, which admittedly wasn't that high to begin with because I don't have a lot of interest in it. But
yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much in the same boat as you. It's not an IP that I'm really familiar with, whereas, you know, the Marvel and DC stuff, they're all over the place. D&D is something that I do know. That's a peripheral set I'm more likely to pick up.
Right.
But it's hard to say. It could be an awesome set. I don't know, but it's not characters or monsters or whatever else that I'm familiar with that I'm going to get a kick out of playing with.
Right. Yeah, no, that's sort of exactly my thought on it. I'm even a little less into DC for the same reason that I'm not really that familiar with the DC characters. Though I'm working on it. I've been watching Justice League.
Well, sure. No, I mean, I really enjoy this game, and I don't have a problem with Marvel, but certainly I'm much more interested in the DC side of things. That's just more of what I was exposed to.
Right.
And the Marvel stuff is great, and I have some passing familiarity with most of these people. Some of them I only knew by name. Others I was like, wait, who? Ant-Man? What? What? So,
see,
you know,
if they
no idea
it,
magic, no idea.
If they released Ant-Man like a year or so, everyone will know because he has a movie coming out.
Yes, he does.
Even though it's probably not actually the Ant-Man that's on the car, but long story.
Shenanigans. But
such shenanigans.
But yeah, it's the same thing for me. I like this game. I enjoy playing with the Marvel characters, but I'm going to enjoy playing with the DC characters a whole lot more because that's just what I like. That's what
yes,
I know.
And there's nothing wrong with doing what you like and liking what you like more than what you only like a little. I'm going to say like five more times just to get it out of my system.
like.
Exactly.
Though, I will say this too, though. If you are somebody who is planning on being a hardcore into the Yu-Gi-Oh! ! Dice Masters, please let us know. We want to hear from you. We want to hear your thoughts on some of the cards that you have there in the set. We want to hear what you think about it because it is something that, you know, there is only a finite amount of money to go around. We just got
money
UXM.
And time.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, I mean, if you go by the equations, time is money, so it's the same thing, really.
Right. We really just got UXM, it feels like.
Right.
DC is right around the corner, as is Age of Ultron, as is D&D.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, they're really setting it up so you can get what you like. I don't think there's the need for everybody to have every set.
Right, and especially with it, it does seem like there's not going to be too much crossover.
No, I mean, you can do it, but I mean, with so many things focusing on Rainbow Draft especially, which is a great format, and we're going to talk about some of that next week, folks, but with so much focus on that, it's pretty much going to be inter-set play.
Intra-set.
Yes, thank you. Intra-set play at these organized play events. Though, of course, you can do whatever you want with casual.
Right. You can, you know, whoever can throw the dice at the other person hardest. But don't do that. Children, please do not do that. If any children are listening to this podcast, don't throw dice at people. It's not nice.
No,
funny
it's not.
Funny sometimes, but not nice.
An assault with dice is not very nice.
Yes. Even though those four-siders look like magic missiles and are used for magic missiles, don't throw them like magic missiles.
And to quote one of my favorite board gaming podcasts, and now you know, because knowing is how you know stuff. All right, then. Before we get to a feature topic, last week you heard from Chris, and he introduced his segment, which was all about building a Dice Master scene in his area. He's going to be alternating by also talking about global abilities. So let's check out what Chris has to say this week.
This is Chris, and this is a Global Minute. One of my favorite globals from the Uncanny X-Men set wasn't too hard to decide on. I wanted something interesting, something that I could possibly build a team around, something that had a little oomph to it, and I found that in Iron Man's global ability. Now, Iron Man's global ability appears on both his common and super rare form, and this is how it reads. Pay one shield energy, target character gains the villain affiliation. That is an awesome global, and it's one of those globals that works great with the card that it's printed on, but it also plays really nice with others. Iron Man benefits from it because most of his card text is about either mitigating or negating damage, and especially from villain sources. And considering the fact that there are so many villains being thrown around right now, that's not a bad thing to have. And of course, if you have the global and a shield energy in your pocket, anybody's a villain, so it works out great. Iron Man's global pairs really nicely with a couple of interesting characters and actions in the set. Here's just a few of the ideas I came up with. First, we have an obvious combo with the basic action card, Take That Villain. You can deal 3 damage to any single character die on the field, provided you've got the action die and a free shield handy. Mystique Raven Darkholm gives you a way to basically auto-buff Mystique by turning anyone in the field into a villain. Essentially, you're paying 1 shield per +1/+1 to Mystique per as many characters are on the field. That's pretty cool. My favorite combo by far is definitely that of Mr. Sinister Nasty Boy. Now, when active, Nasty Boy allows you to deal 1 damage to your opponent for every villain that gets knocked out. Again, with a spare shield or two, even the non-villains that you feel that your opponent puts the hurt on end up returning the favor on their way to the prep area. Throw in a Cyclops field leader and that damage becomes 2, and that should give anyone pause before KOing all your attackers. If you stretch back into the AVX set to find a couple more friends of this global, you'll see several options. I'm going to talk about just a couple. There's a great interaction with Magneto's global ability from that set, which reads, pay 1 mask energy to reroll a villain die. Now remember, that character dice in the field that end up losing character status are KO'd, so with a shield and a mask energy in hand, say goodbye to any big blocker or heavy hitter on a sour roll. And don't overlook Mjolnir, Fist of the Righteous, which can really, pardon the pun, hammer your opponent's newly minted villains into submission with 6 or even 8 damage. That's all for now. This has been a Global Minute. Until next time, keep your eye out for that unexpected red text.
Right, so as we look into the Reserve Pool mailbag, which you, of course, can find yourself inside of, though hopefully not you yourself because there's not a lot of air in there, but if you send a message to mailbag@thereservepool.com, or, of course, Dave or Evan at thereservepool.com, and we're going to get Randy and Chris emails there, though they're not there yet. Anyway, email any of those places, and we may use what you have to say on the show. So, this week, Ryan writes, and he says, I love Dice Masters, but do not get to play it often. I usually bring 2 sets worth to work, and I've gotten a friend into the game by selling him my duplicates. I haven't done any organized play yet. Bringing that into work is actually a pretty cool idea. There are a lot of people who look for little filler games, and so, Ryan, I like your idea. But I'm designing this playmat, and he shows us a picture of it. And I was wondering, do people usually use a life counter on the playmats, or do players usually have some other means of keeping track? And then he also asks for our feedback of this playmat. And let's start with there real quick. I mean, we're not going to show everybody what this is because it's his own work. I'm going to say, Ryan, I really like it.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. I like the
design.
Yeah. It's late. My brain isn't working anymore.
It has a very modern look to it, and it's not something that's going to be tied to just one set. So, Ryan, you're on the right track. The only thing we talked about that we didn't like is that the KO area and the transit zone are kind of off kilter with one another, and we just were like looking for symmetry, and it wasn't there.
Yeah, it looks awesome, though. Yeah, don't worry about that. I understand stylistic stuff. I'm just, oh God, not the symmetries, and something in my brain pops. But that said, yeah, it does look really futuristic. It reminded me, I think at some point in the X-Men movies, we see like the Cerebro interface.
Yes.
And it reminds me of something that should have been there. So.
Yeah, absolutely. It would also, I had a theme for Windows using Rain Meter once that had some graphics that looked like that too. So cool job. And if you'd like us to share with anybody, Ryan, let us know, and we certainly will. But in the meantime, when you have that up somewhere to sell, let us know, or at least let me know. I'd like to look at that, maybe to replace one of my mouse pad mats. So let's get to the question. Yes. Do people usually use the life counter on the play mats, or do we have some other means of keeping track? I see a lot of both.
I haven't played with anyone who uses a playmat. I don't use a playmat. I just use a 20-sided die.
Yeah.
Which has its flaws if you're... Well, you can't actually... No, you can't go over 20 in this game. So
right.
A 20-sided die is entirely sufficient.
Absolutely. I use a 20-sided die myself, although my mouse pad playmats from Kaka... I'm showing my Pittsburghese today. My mouse pad playmats from Kaka... they do have a life track at the bottom. I very rarely use it. That said, I do see a lot of people using those life trackers. The one thing is that with so many dice rolling, whatever you put there to slide along and track your life often ends up getting bumped and moved, and you really got to be honest and remember, which sometimes it's not hard, but sometimes it is. The remembering, not the honesty. Honesty is not hard.
I'd almost say it would be better, like, on the top or on the right or left side, just somewhere that's not going to be, like, in the line of dice fire constantly.
So that could be really anywhere on the map. I do use a D20. I think a lot of people do. If you wanted to have something in there, I would say keep it off to the side, whereas a lot of the mats that I see have it down at the bottom. I don't think that's perfect. I think something off to the side would be better. The dice aren't going to be rolled over there, maybe in the top left of the mat or something like that. But I don't know. Folks, this is a good way to give some feedback because we have a lot of people out there who design mats for the community to use. My own mat was a community-driven one. How do you track your life? Let us know in the comments so Ryan can see there. How do you track your life? Do you use a die or do you use a mat or do you have some other means? So anyway, Ryan, hope that helps you. And for everybody else, mailbag@thereservepool.com.
Tell us of your ridiculous things. We wish to hear them. Or your questions. These are also good.
Or your tales of victory, or your tales of defeat, or any of those sorts of things. We're still working on amassing a catalog so that we can unveil these things. But right now, we're thrilled to have these extra contributors. That's really cool. I really enjoy what the Randy and Chris are bringing to the table. All of that said, let's move on to the feature. So over the past couple of weeks, we have seen, well, actually a lot of information about what we presume to be the very next superhero set to come out, which is the DC Dice Masters, Justice League Dice Masters, some are calling it. But regardless, DC Dice Masters is going to be soon upon us. And man, we have a ton of information. If you haven't seen this on the blog, you've really missed out, and go check it out right now, because we know everybody who's going to be in the starter set. We know a couple of the basic actions. We know all of the super rares. We know almost every character that's in the entire set. And we even know a few of the cards and their abilities. So, wow. Where do we even begin, Evan? For one, I think great includes in this set. I'm really happy about a lot of the characters I see, though there are some omissions, and we'll get to that.
Yeah, I mean, I at least recognize like half the set, so I know they're hitting the greats. I will admit, my DC, I was sort of a little into DC when I was very young, and then for a very long time it was just Marvel. And I'm starting to get a little more interested in them again, partially because of DC Dice Masters. So right. I'm trying to learn who people are. So this should help.
Yeah. Well, certainly we have the big three, right? You know, you have Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. We have some of the villains who would matter with those folks, such as Lex Luthor, Harley Quinn, the Joker. So that's pretty great, too. Catwoman's in the set. We also have some characters who are very popular through other means right now, like the TV series Green Arrow, or Arrow, rather, as well as Flash, because we have Flash, we have Arrow, or Green Arrow. We have Black Canary in here. Deathstroke was certainly a part of that. We have characters who will be familiar with fans of the Teen Titans cartoon. We have the Green Lantern, who, of course, people know. We have Constantine, which is a popular show on TV right now as well. So, in all, this is pretty awesome. Even the actions, the non-basic actions, are pretty recognizable with a Batarang and a Green Lantern Power Ring.
Yeah, and I even recognize a couple of the less known ones, though. That's from the cartoons I've watched here and there.
Right.
That Black Manta, I actually recognize. I didn't remember what his name was, but I'm like, hey, I've seen that hat.
Yep. Yeah, that actually took me a little bit because I always confuse. I look at Black Manta's head. It also kind of looks like the Hall of Doom from the old Super Friends cartoon. And I know that Black Manta exists, but I'm like, wait, why is the Hall of Doom a character? It's just, I got to be smacked upside the head. But
and then you mentioned that, and now I have that Cartoon Network skit of, you know, Solomon Grundy wants pants too.
Yep. Yeah. That was a great skit.
Best bit. Yeah. At some point, we're going to ask her DC. There'll be a DC contest or something, and we're going to want, you know, card entries, and someone's going to send in Solomon Grundy's pants.
Yeah.
I'm just going to have to give them a prize of some sort.
Well, speaking of which, we do appear to have Solomon Grundy in here. We have other fan favorites. Of course, I left out Robin when discussing the Batman family. We have the Martian Manhunter. John Jones himself is in this set. We have a Yellow Lantern logo, which can only be Sinestro. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in here that's like, oh, yep. Know them.
I see Brainiac symbol in there.
Yep, Brainiac's there. We have Zatanna, who is commonly rated one of the most attractive comic book characters. I hope her inclusion is more than fan service because she is in the starter set. I mean, we have a good mix of enough to rope in people who are, you know, or maybe in your boat, Evan, where you're less familiar with them, but then also characters who are going to entice me, such as, of course, the Blue and the Gold, Booster Gold, Blue Beetle, all there. Thrilled.
So you're probably going to yell at me for this, but the Blue and the Gold, that's the little triangle with the star in it?
Yeah, that's Booster Gold and then Blue Beetle. Well, yeah, Blue Beetle and Booster Gold were very good friends. Specifically,
yes, that I know. I just
Ted
don't
Kord
remember.
Blue Beetle and, you know, Booster's Booster. Now, I don't know if they're going to have Ted Kord or Jamie in here.
Or maybe both. They like to do that.
I don't know because I've never heard it said. I don't know if he's like Jaime because the current Blue Beetle is of Hispanic descent. But I like the current Blue Beetle, too. His costume's awesome. Ted Kord was a little more of he was more of like a funny Batman in some ways.
Yeah, I'm trying, because I think he was in the Death of Superman storyline some. And
I'm
that's,
sure
that's
he
the
was.
Only thing I've actually read where he was in.
Right. He had a really interesting appearance in Blackest Night as well. But, I mean, that's all for another time. There's a lot of great inclusions here. I really can't complain about any of it. You know, the text of the super rares is known. The text of some of the cards are known. And I got to say, what I'm seeing so far, Evan, is very, very thematic.
Yes. I mean, aside from characters who I don't know their faces, so I wasn't really sure. I don't know their faces or I don't know their icons at all. A lot of these characters, you know, I recognize. Like, you know, if I recognize the characters, I probably recognize their icons, too.
Sure, sure. I mean, we have the Atom. I was hoping to see some Captain Atom, but we'll talk about, again, some people who we don't have yet. And there are, of course, three dice that we have not yet figured out. That would be the tan one and the brown one near Darkseid. And that would also be the orange one on the far left.
Future Dave here. We've decided that the orange die is the Persuader, who has been known to carry a fiery halberd. Back to the show.
And I'm not 100% sure on the die that's black with gold stuff on it. It looks like, I mean, it could be Zod because of the goggles, but it could also be Plastic Man, but it could also be a few others. I really don't know. Yeah. But we know most of the set.
I still wonder if that brown and black one in the, at the top is Lobo or something, because he's sort of recognizable. Or he's sort of like well-known. I mean, I know who he is, so that means he's at least sort of well-known. And it kind of looks like him a little, sort of.
The coloring doesn't make a ton of sense, but I guess it could be. I mean, you do see a lot of him with...
But neither does Darkseid, so, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. Darkseid's close, though. But, yeah, I'm not sure.
Darker blue, that. Even I know that.
Right. But even some of the characters, what we know of the cards so far... incredibly thematic. For example, Wonder Woman controls what villain must block which, like, a specific attacking character, which is cool. She's like using her lasso of truth to take care of it. Superman can't be damaged during the attack step. Only trickery is going to get him. Batman has to attack if villains are active. Like, that he cannot sleep when there's evil afoot in Gotham. I mean, that's basically what we have here. Deathstroke, you can't kill him. Well, that, I mean, especially fans of Arrow are going to say, yeah, that kind of sounds familiar. I have to admit my familiarity with Deathstroke is mostly from Arrow. You know, take from that what you will. But,
yeah, I remember him from Teen Titans as Arrow, so I've got a little bit of the both sides. But he's sort of unkillable there, too.
Yeah, and Darkseid does damage to a whole bunch of people and direct damage to the controller, and it's just all kinds of craziness. I mean, these five cards that we see in the starter set that we can read clearly, definitely quite thematic. And what we know of the super rares, also quite thematic. For example, the Flash by himself can't be blocked, or Catwoman uses your opponent's strongest dice against them. Like, it's kind of like her cunning and her acrobatics. Black Canary, this is one of my favorites. So thematic. Black Canary will clear away your opponent's potential blockers. I mean, it's basically her canary cry. That's perfect. That's exactly what she would do. It's so well done. I mean, early returns on the theme in this set, I mean, two thumbs up in my book.
Yeah, I mean, again, working with limited knowledge of the characters, but this is sounding really thematic. And I guess I'll talk about what I am familiar with, which is numbers. And I'm looking at the numbers. I'm seeing, you know, we have two sixes, two fours, and a five. I'm expecting cost curves similar to what we saw in Uncanny X-Men, which is great.
We do have a few more Total Fielding Cost 6 characters, it looks like, so far, that are going to be introduced with this set, where that seemed to be something they were mostly moving away from. We does look like we have a couple of those, but... Even so, I mean, those are probably going to be...
Keep in mind, there were a lot of sixes in UXM, but they were not quite as unbalanced. Yeah, there were a lot of repeat sixes, and they were, and overall, it wasn't quite as overbalanced. You know, it wasn't, you know, like a third sixes as opposed to how it was in Avengers versus X-Men, which was just way too many
characters. That's fair.
So, I mean, I'm looking at that, and... It actually looks like we have a decent mix on the character cost, though it's a little hard to read from the image.
Yeah. No, hard to read.
Numbers. But
yeah. They showed like a Zatanna and a couple of the others in the book, in the rule book that you can download the PDF file, but it's so hard to see. They're very much shrunken, so it's very pixelated. You're not going to see it. There are some conspicuous absences. A lot of people have said, oh, well, where's Nightwing? I mean, but I think the other side of that is they've definitely left themselves somewhere to go with the next set where they'll be able to include more characters that, you know, the average DC fan is probably going to know, while also being able to bring back a few from this set and also being able to introduce, you know, again, some brand new characters that are maybe a little more specialized. We definitely want to see Nightwing. I'd love to see... As a Justice League International fan, I'd love to see Fire, Ice, Rocket Red would be cool. Max Lord would be awesome. Gorilla Grodd should come in somewhere. Yes. Guy Gardner, whether as a Green Lantern or Red Lantern. Maybe how about a Guardian of Oa? That would be awesome, too.
Sounds like maybe a useful thing for a basic action, kind of? Or not a basic action, a non-basic action.
Who?
the Guardians. I know, and they're Guardians of Oa. Familiar. I'm relatively unfamiliar with Green Lantern lore, but
oh, okay.
I could almost see them being used as a basic action rather than a character.
I mean, perhaps. Certainly, though, they do have Guardian of Oa in Hero. I actually have a Green Lantern Fast Forces HeroClix set, and a Guardian of Oa is a playable one there. But, you know, there are other forms of Green Lantern or other characters right. who have the ring, you know. What about some of the other Chromatic Lanterns? We could maybe get into some of... Gosh, a Blackest Night event would be awesome with this, because you could have, like, undead villainous versions of some of your characters.
I wouldn't be surprised if we were to see that. That sounds like the type of thing, you know, it's a fairly recent event, and looking what they've been doing with the Marvel Dice Master side of things, I wouldn't be surprised if they picked that up for an expansion at some point.
Future Dave again, they've already announced that their next one is going to be the War of Light, so pretty much just as awesome. All right, back in.
It was a pretty popular event, too. Now, this one is going to be following Trinity War. I haven't followed the comics too much since the New 52, and that's the only thing. I don't know if they will pick up Blackest Night because it's not New 52. But though they've shown an allusion to the fact that some of the old stuff might still somehow exist in a recent Booster Gold one-shot back in September. But I digress. I haven't followed so much, so I don't know a lot about what Trinity War entailed. I don't know how much of a stickler DC is going to be about that either, because, well, some great events were back then. I mean, Infinite Crisis, Final Crisis, Flashpoint, which unfortunately led to the New 52. But
you should
have Blackest
said something
Night,
else.
Brightest Day.
You should have said something else with Crisis, because that would have been funny. No, I'm kidding.
Oh,
I'm
all kinds. Well, there was
said Infinite Crisis, and then another
Infinite Crisis, Final Crisis, Identity Crisis, many other kinds of crises.
All the crises.
All the crises. Yes, but
If they want to do a Superman-centric one, they can do Death and Rebirth of Superman at some point. Though again, that's the, you know, before the New 52. I assume.
Oh man, how great would it be to have Doomsday in this game?
Yeah, that's someone who, why isn't he there? I don't know how reoccurring he's been since his event, but he certainly shook things up for a bit.
How about Bizarro? That'd be great. There's no Power Girl. Steel, absolutely. So there are a lot of characters that they would still be able to include who everybody will be excited about, you know, some aspect of them. So there's a lot more there's just a lot more out there. And I think that's good. I don't mind that they're missing a few, because that leaves the door open for future quality sets with the DC imprint. Without getting too redundant with who your characters are going
right,
to be, of
yeah,
course.
Let's hope they don't. Well, I think Uncanny X-Men had a reasonable amount of repeat characters. And I'm expecting the big guys are going to show up in the next DC set a few times, but...
Yeah, you would think so.
Variants of Batman and Superman or something.
Well, let's look at who's in the starter set. I mean, I think that's kind of an important facet with that. Let me pull it up.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're all pretty... I mean, I recognized all of them, I guess. Green Arrow's eye is probably the one I recognize least, just because that doesn't look like an arrow to me. It looks like a throwing dagger to me.
Yeah, it's not exactly the die I would have chosen for him, but it's obviously him. But
arrowhead as opposed to...
And it's green. I mean, yeah.
It is.
Yeah. But here's who we have.
See,
in the,
this is my... I guess that is green. It just looked black to me. Aw, colors, I hate you.
Here's who we have in the starter set. Batman, Superman, Deathstroke, Zatanna... John Jones / Martian Manhunter, depending on what you want to call him, Wonder Woman, Green Arrow, and Darkseid. So we have a big villain who everybody knows. We have a couple characters, you know, with, you know, Deathstroke is known to DC fans, but it's also going to be known to people who are fans of things like Arrow. We have Green Arrow, who's incredibly popular right now. We have Zatanna. We have the Big Three. And we have Martian Manhunter, who is... I've always liked
Martian
Manhunter.
He's really iconic. He's a character that, while maybe not always a frontliner, but a headliner, he's very recognizable.
Yes, he is. I mean, they nailed this starter set. I mean, that is exactly what you do. You put some of the most recognizable Justice League. You have a good, solid core of the Justice League in here. I mean, you could argue that Green Lantern deserves a place in a Justice League set more than, I don't, like, Zatanna or perhaps The Flash. But in general, I think they nailed this with, you know, a good mix of characters.
Yeah, I mean, you could maybe make arguments for, well, you know, Joker is really popular now. Maybe they should have had him in instead of Darkseid. But honestly, he's not. He doesn't strike me so much as a Justice League villain as a Batman villain. Darkseid, I think, fits in there more.
Right. I mean, the Justice League, kind of like we talked about for the Avengers, or when, you know, the heroes have to band together to face a threat that's a little more than what one of them is going to face on their own, generally. And Darkseid is certainly one of those threats, whereas, you know, Deathstroke might be a little more peripheral, though he's certainly a threat all on his own, and, you know, the Teen Titans had to deal with him more than a little bit.
Yes. With all kinds of horrible consequences, but I'm not going to spoil the show, because it was a pretty good show.
Yeah, it was. We also know in the starter set, then, speaking of thematic, this one basic action in particular, anger issues. This is a picture of Red Lanterns just kind of, like, messing stuff up. The target character gets +3 attack and overcrush, which is this game's new term for trample.
I love that term. I mean, it's...
It sounds like a little silly, but I like
it's a little silly,
now.
But it's great.
Yeah. And then the global, pay a fist, target character gets +1 attack until end of turn. I mean, this is pretty much perfect. It's anger
so
issues.
It's like a buffed throw car with the global from... With a slightly different, yeah, global from invulnerability, just yeah. Changed to a different power type, a different energy type, I believe.
And it's perfect that it's fist. Yeah. I mean, this card is so
it's punching.
It might be the most thematic basic action that we've had to this point.
Yeah, I really like that picture. Kudos
yeah, oh, it's
to the,
awesome.
The DC artist who did that. Whenever that, I imagine it was doing that during the color war.
The War of the Lanterns
war,
or something
war
along
the
those
or
lines.
Something.
Yeah. Then we also have the kind of like the bottom of Villainous Pact. I can't really see what's happening on there, though I suspect
but I have to suspect that's Lex Luthor's war suit.
That looks like Lex Luthor, and then on the left there, that kind of looks like Black Manta. It could be.
Yeah,
with the
I
red
can
eyes.
See that.
So it's probably a few of the villains together doing their Hall of Doom thing and arguing about pants. Your opponent chooses one non-villain character. All other non-villains can't block this turn. So basically you're picking one hero and only that hero would be allowed to block. Now other villains, of course, are fine. And then the global also impacts...
it's a draw mechanic.
Yeah, it also impacts things in a very similar way to what Professor X does now. You pay a mask... Once per turn during your turn, if you have no dice in your prep area, you may draw a die and place it in your prep area. I think that will see a lot of play. Though, of course, it has the same double-edged sword as Professor X, which is it benefits everybody equally. So it might help you speed up, but it's also going to help your opponent speed up. So if it's going to help...
Yeah, and I think it's a little tamer.
It is. So certainly, because you're limited to once per turn.
Right.
It's just going to be one extra die.
And it doesn't have the effect of the Professor X global, which is to essentially keep your sidekicks out of your bag forever.
Exactly. So,
which is very powerful.
Definitely. But I like this. It's pretty good. It's a good ability. I can't speak to the theme of it. It's pretty good in terms of what the action does. I don't know why the global would make sense with the action itself, but anger issues top to bottom is awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's finish this up then with the mechanisms, because we talked about Overcrush. Nothing here is new, but now we have terms for it. So Overcrush is trample.
Right.
Straightforward.
Right.
We also have Regenerate. If this character is knocked out, roll it. If you roll a character face, return it to the field, but not the attack zone. Otherwise,
which is interesting, because I think there was like one or two other characters who had that mechanic. There's, I think, one of the versions of Magic had that. And I can't really think of anyone else who did. So maybe that means there's going to be more characters who's going to have that sort of ability in
yes.
DC.
I'm hoping so. I'd love to see it codified. And Retaliation, if an affiliated character you control is KO'd, deal 1 damage to an opponent.
Way, I don't think we've seen that specifically on anyone, but we've seen things very similar to that. Like, not, it's very frequently, if this character is knocked out, does something. Mm-hmm. But I guess that'll also be a more common mechanic. So I think it's I like that because it means there's some expectation of ability that, you know, if something's codified with a name, you're going to see it a lot, and that means you start planning for it and thinking about it more, and it sort of becomes part of the game's code.
Yeah, that's my hope too.
You know, that leads to more identifiable strategies, more ways of doing things, more, you know, more ways of talking about the future, because it'll be like, oh, this character is perfect for a retaliation ability. So
definitely. No, I mean, I think it's great. I think there's a lot to be excited about, not just for this set, but for future DC sets as well.
And future Marvel Dice Master sets, honestly.
Future Marvel Dice Master sets, we can't forget those. We just don't know as much about them at this point.
Yeah, I'm sure once DC comes out, we'll probably start getting tons of Age of Ultron news, or D&D Dice Masters news, but...
Yeah. Well, some of it may even come out a little bit earlier, but I myself am pretty excited for all of this.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it as well.
It looks great. So, all right. Well, that about brings us to the end. What are you looking forward to in DC? Let us know. There's so many ways that you can interact with us, whether it's mailbag@thereservepool.com, Twitter, subscribing to us on YouTube, following us on the blog. Oh, yeah, our Twitter is @thereservepool. Pretty simple there. You also find Randy and Chris on Twitter with the Twitter handles are escaping me, but if you... you'll see us interacting on there a lot, so maybe I'll be more prepared some other time. But but in any case, you can also support the site on the site. It's a small little thing on the menu, on the sidebar. Like, you can pledge $1. It helps us, helps keep the lights on. We'd like to do more with some many different aspects of the site, but they're all going to cost things. So... we want to make contests better. We want to have more interesting things to give away. So, you know, give us a hand. We're not going to go anywhere if you don't, but the help would be very much appreciated.
Right.
So.
And speaking of contests, I think I've finally got my ducks in a row, and we should see the 5th contest in the next week or so.
Very good. And Chris is going to be helping us get one together as well with some other materials. So
we
have so much going on. We have articles coming up all the time, editorials, news, character reviews, all sorts of things. They're all there. And of course this podcast. So keep following. There is so much to be excited about and so much to follow with this game. And we enjoy sharing it with all of you. So thank you so much for listening. This is Dave.
And this is Evan.
And this has been The Reserve Pool. We'll talk to you later. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Randy and Chris are bringing to the table.
Please no tales of feet, though. We're not that kind of blog. Or yeah. not that kind of podcast.
No, we're not. Or blog, frankly.
Or blog, yeah.
Or YouTube channel.
Right.